If you've listened to my show, you know I really take Super Beats every day, but sometimes I get so caught up in my busy schedule that I can forget. And that's why I'm excited to tell you guys about their fantastic new product, Super Beats Soft Chews. Super Beats Soft Chews gives me all of the potent heart health benefits of Super Beats packed into two delicious soft chews that I can take with me wherever I go. And Super Beats Soft Chews comes with a new breakthrough ingredient, grapeseed extract, that supports normal blood pressure, circulation, and natural energy in your body. They use highly concentrated premium grape seeds sourced only from the world-renowned Loire Valley in France. The grape seed extract used in Super Beats Soft Chews was clinically studied and shown to support healthy blood pressure levels. Get your Super Beats Soft Chews today at danasbeats.com or call 800-664-5617. And when you buy two bags, they'll throw in the third bag for free. That's danasbeats.com, 800-664-5617.
Article this morning, you know, I got to say, they apparently spent 10 months with undercover reporters trying to track down every person that went to school with Justice Kavanaugh 30 years ago. You know, it's an amazing level of reporting, trying to just really dig up any dirt they can on the guy. I think that follows up with the rather shameful circus we saw during the confirmation hearing where they took allegations, they sat on them, they didn't make them public, they revealed them at the 11th hour. And you know what? The Judiciary Committee did what we should have done. We held a hearing, we invited the principal witness to testify, we heard it, the American people heard it.
Wow. Okay, so where to even start? Because this is the most ridiculous damn thing that, this is also the third correction, yeah, in less than a month from the New York Times. Okay, so I'm gonna walk you down the latest. Again, I cannot even believe they're reviving this Kavanaugh smear tactic. Welcome to the show. I'm Dana Lash, at Dana Lash on Twitter, official Dana Lash on Facebook. I was reading some of this yesterday, and I remember when this particular woman came out and began making these claims. She was like the last one, I believe. And that's already after this had gone on for quite some time, where you had Christine Blasey Ford and, you know, many others. So the New York Times did this story, and it is from this book that they are releasing. It's a very anti-Kavanaugh book. And they decided that there's this huge piece in the New York Times, and it's riding off of the allegation, one of these allegations in this book. Now, the New York Times, which prides itself on being such a bastion of journalist ethics and criticized me and attacked me so hard when I said that they didn't actually do that. The title of the story is Brett Kavanaugh Fit In With the Privileged Kids. She did not. And it looks at Deborah Ramirez. Now, remember her. She's the last one to come forward. She's the one who said that she couldn't be certain. She said her eyes were closed, but she thought that because she was with a group of people and they were all joking around, that the accusation was that Brett Kavanaugh somehow made her touch his willy. And the action was, this is news. I can't even believe I have to talk to you people like this. This is the top story. Democrats are calling for him to be impeached off the Supreme Court. And she said that she couldn't actually be sure. Her eyes were closed. And then that he, like, I guess, shook it in front of her and she batted it away or something, and it ruined her forever. Something to that extent. Yeah. And they have this huge piece in the New York Times. And this, they say, well, you know, we found, they say these are credible, again, the phrase, credible accusations. Their accusation in this, and this is the big one, and Max Steyer is the classmate who came forward and said, oh, yes, I absolutely saw this. Now, here's the thing. Max Steyer represented Clinton during all the Lewinsky stuff. So just so you know, I feel like it's important for you to know that, right? That's kind of a big piece of information. That seems relatively important. So this guy, this Max Steyer, he said that he saw Kavanaugh with his pants down at a drunken dorm party and friends pushed his male copulatory organ into the hand of a female student. And they don't actually touch on the fact that he is a huge Clinton stooge and he's involved in, he's a political operative. They don't touch on this at all. Like, there's no way, there's no reason why Max Steyer would come out now and say all of these things right now. There's no way. So the accusation is that Steyer reported this to the FBI and that the FBI didn't investigate it. And then apparently also they said, well, he also notified senators investigating this. Here's where the problems come in, though. First off, Chuck Grassley on the Senate committee that was investigating this, he's the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, was saying that actually, no, this never happened. No one ever contacted us about this particular, you know, why didn't you submit it in? And why didn't you report this to us as we were doing all of this? So, and that's where it gets, that's where it goes. He said that Ramirez's lawyers, not only did they not actually tell any senators, seven times the lawyers refused to provide Deborah Ramirez's lawyers. This is, again, the woman who is saying all of this stuff. They refused seven times to provide any documents, any evidence at all whatsoever referenced in the article and witness accounts to support any of these claims. They refused to allow the Senate Judiciary Committee to even speak with her. They refused to even allow Deborah Ramirez to provide a written statement. So, having to work from just that limited amount, the investigators with the Judiciary Committee spoke and, as according to Senator Grassley, were reviewing material from a bunch of different Yale classmates of not only Ramirez's but Kavanaugh's in order to assess the claim. They concluded it with a 414-page investigative summary that was publicly made available at the time and is still publicly available, and Grassley provides the link to the PDF of the investigative summary. Furthermore, he said that the committee review found zero verifiable evidence to support the claims. Not only that, but Ramirez's own friends say, no, we have no idea what the hell you all are talking about. And Ramirez herself said she couldn't even be sure that it was Kavanaugh. They couldn't even be sure. And in fact, he also links, helpfully, this story that they ran initially about Christine Blasey Ford. And this is from when it all went down. And it said the Times had interviewed several dozen people over the past 2 weeks in an attempt to corroborate Ramirez's story and could find no one with firsthand knowledge. Ramirez herself contacted former Yale classmates asking if they even recalled the incident and told some of them she couldn't even be sure Kavanaugh was involved. Literally from the Times story. Wow. Holy crap. So they were completely undermining their current story now all the way back then when they were writing this thing about Blasey Ford. Now, Grassley notes that ultimately Ramirez's legal team only agreed to contact the FBI with the claims. She apparently, reportedly, it was never confirmed, interviewed by the FBI during the supplemental background investigations, and then that was it. So it was, and what gets me is that it was so important that they didn't bring it to the FBI. And it amazes me also how the New York Times was trying to insist that they corroborated this story. They talked to two people who told them someone that would not actually talk to them told them that he saw something happen to someone else, and that woman that he said he saw something happen to says she has no memory and doesn't know what's going on. Corroboration! I mean, this is insane. This is so entirely insane. And so here's this. Then they actually had to correct the New York Times because the Washington Post even came out, and I can't even believe I'm saying this. The Washington Post contradicted them. They contradicted them. And so, I know this is insane. And it's all from this goofy book. So, this whole story has been, they tried to revive the weakest accusation. And you had Democrat presidential candidates, I think almost all of them, were demanding Kavanaugh's impeachment. Democrats in the Senate, Washington Post says that they are mounting an impeachment of Kavanaugh because of all of this. They said it was a previously unreported story, and it's literally actually discredited in the book. And it's also discredited by the actual other New York Times reporting. So the New York Times, and this is where it gets even, I mean, it doesn't end here. So the New York Times then tries to go and correct its story, right? Because they're so wrong. It is the dumbest thing ever. They had, they corrected, and it said, an earlier version, this is a correction, editor's note. An earlier version of this article, which was adapted from a forthcoming book, did not include one element of the book's account regarding an assertion by a Yale classmate that friends of Brett Kavanaugh pushed his male copulatory organ into the hand of a female student at a drunken dorm party. The book reports that the female student declined to be interviewed, and friends say that she does not recall the incident. The information has been added to the article because it wasn't included. They didn't even include this at all. This was, they go into the 11th hour. This is what they added. They said the female student declined to be interviewed, and friends say she does not recall the episode. That's like kind of integral to your whole story. I mean, right? That's kind of the whole piece that was published in the New York Times was done purposefully to mislead people. They tried to obscure the denial that this actually took place by just kind of writing around it. This is I can't even believe this passed any sort of editorial standards to get published in any particular newspaper. I mean, this is libel. This is clear-cut libel. And I think I know there are a lot of people out there, and I'm one of them, thinking that the New York Times owes Kavanaugh and his entire family an apology. When you have something that huge to correct, you don't just offer a little editor's note. You retract the whole damn thing, because that is the entire thrust of their article was built around that very thing. And I remember, Kane, I remember when this particular accuser first came out, it was at the end of, it was after Ford's testimony. And it was after several other, well, a couple of other accusers, including one that was represented by the porn lawyer. And I literally can't remember his name, don't remind me. It was after all of those other ones were discredited and other people came out, you know, against them. And they had already gone after Christine Blasey Ford's friend also. And I mean, we have so much to get into still with this. And not only am I going to, because I want to look at how Democrats are now once again trying to push the impeach Kavanaugh thing. That's a thing they're running with. The second thing is, do you think, and I just want to lay this on the table for you to think about while we go to break, do you think that maybe this in a way was done because, and I have polling for you to corroborate this, Trump has increased in the polls again. Democrats are starting to take a hit, especially those who've been speaking the loudest about gun control. Do you think that the whole Beto thing and all of this stuff actually has been hurting them to the point where they needed a distraction? I'm just curious. And they decided to seize on this book. The fact that this book came out after, you know, Carrie Severino's, and that is nuts. Because that was one of the most well-researched books I've ever seen in quite some time. So I can't even believe that they came out with this book after that. We got a lot to unpack with that. I have a ton of other things for you as well. In the meantime, though, we gotta tip our hat to some people who help provide you with free conservative radio. And we appreciate all they do. CarShield is a great program. I actually made sure that my college freshman is included and has his CarShield because it makes the process of getting your car fixed for a covered repair easy. And, you know, if your kid's going to school in a different state or hours and hours away, you can't always be there to take care of some of the stuff, but CarShield can. And so they have 24/7 roadside assistance. It doesn't matter where you are, they'll come get you. You also get a rental car while yours is in the shop. And you can take your vehicle to a mechanic to have it fixed, or you can take it to the dealership to get the work done at your choice. And with all of this, So many people have been using CarShield. They've paid out about $2 billion in claims, and they want to help you as well. You don't have to be afraid of super high repair bills or think that, you know, you're kind of on your own if your car breaks down. CarShield's there to help. So get covered by the ultimate and extended vehicle protection by calling 800-CAR-6000. Mention code Dana or visit CarShield.com and use code Dana to save 10%. CarShield.com, code Dana, 800-CAR-6000. Mention code Dana. A deductible may apply. If you've listened to my show, you know I really take Super Beats every day, but sometimes I get so caught up in my busy schedule that I can forget. And that's why I'm excited to tell you guys about their fantastic new product, Super Beats Soft Chews. Super Beats Soft Chews gives me all of the potent heart health benefits of Super Beats packed into two delicious soft chews that I can take with me wherever I go. And Super Beats Soft Chews comes with a new breakthrough ingredient, grapeseed extract that supports normal blood pressure, circulation, and natural energy in your body. They use highly concentrated premium grape seeds sourced only from the world-renowned Loire Valley in France. The grape seed extract used in Super Beats Soft Chews was clinically studied and shown to support healthy blood pressure levels. Get your Super Beats Soft Chews today at danasbeats.com or call 800-664-5617. And when you buy two bags, they'll throw in the third bag for free. That's danasbeats.com, 800-664-5617.
You won't miss any Dana shows by subscribing to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever podcasts are available.
I don't want to save this one for headlines because it's too important. Rick Ocasek, just a legendary dude. The Kane and I were just talking. The Cars, Rick Ocasek, perfect, perfect marriage of new wave and rock and roll. He was the segue. He was that link, that bridge, that band that was amazing. And it wasn't just the band. It wasn't just the Cars. Everyone knows Rick Ocasek for the Cars. This man was a legendary producer. He did Bad Religion, produced them in 96. He worked with Not a Surf. He worked with Weezer. He worked with so many bands. Excellent producer. And he had that, you know how you got so many different producers out there that have their own little fingerprint and you can just tell it. Rick Ocasek's the same way. Passed away from natural causes, age 75 years old. And sad, he was found by his third wife. And they were still legally married at the time, even though they had separated. Paulina Parwitzkova, who was the model in the 80s. Like, she was the model. And when she got with Rick Ocasek, I remember when I was a kid and I would see pictures of them together. And I'm like, okay, what is happening here? Because he was a dork. Let's be real. He was a genius, but he was a dork. But they made it work. They had a happy family and just awful. So our prayers to their family. It just, so you have him and you have Eddie Money. My grandmother always said, happens in threes. So.
Is this going to be a musical threes?
I hope not. Nobody else. Stop it. Everyone check on people. Like, check on Tony Bennett and everybody else right now. All right, really fast. I'm sorry to be short, but that was important. Let's get
and
into some
now,
quick headlines.
All of the news you would probably miss.
It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
The story is insane. This comes out of Indiana, WNDU. Police say that 2,246 medically preserved fetal remains were found on the property of Ulrich George Klaufer, a late abortion doctor who used to operate a South Bend clinic. The investigation still is ongoing. That's just awful, though. That is absolutely awful. Not all superheroes wear capes. They definitely don't. There was a Montana woman who sits outside. Her Montana grandmother sits outside holding a hairdryer to trick speeding motorists into thinking that she's a cop, and that's a speed laser, whatever. Thank you, radar gun. It's South Finley Point. They call her an honorary trooper. The police do. Stay with us, folks.
Delivering the truth online and on air. Listen to the Dana Show live on the radio or at danaradio.com or on demand.
I don't want to give in to the hype or some of the scare tactics that have been employed to stop us from even considering this in the first place. Much like we don't go door to door to enforce almost any law in the United States. In fact, I don't think we do that for any law in the United States. This would not be something that we would do. And I only raise that, Joy, because others have said, you know, this is something that we would fear if there were a mandatory buyback program. No, we expect people to follow the law. And that's certainly what I believe will happen.
That's Bader. Bader O'Rourke. talking about how he's trying to now move the goalposts. Well, I wasn't saying that we were going to go to door to door. Well, you said you were, yeah, hell yes, you're taking our guns. So how are you going to do it there, champ? Oh, you think that because you pass, you undermine natural rights. This is how they think about it. Okay. They think that, well, we passed this. It's a law. So you got to be lawful and abide by it. You would sanction through the government forcible theft of lawfully owned property. That's not a law. That's tyranny. Nope. Why don't you follow the law? The law is already written. He's trying to describe a theoretic government lawless action as being lawful just because he wants it to take place. What a mind job. Yeah, I don't think, no, nobody's buying that. Nobody's going to sit here and buy that. You're talking about making something lawless lawful because you, a tyrant, sanctions it. That's not how that works, kid. I say kid, he's older than me. It's not how that works, champ. He acts so immature. I feel like he's like 20 years older than me. He's, or younger than me. He's older than me, but he, I feel like he's 20 years younger than me, right? It's so weird. He's like, he comes across as this failure to launch kind of dude. Anyway, yeah, that's not how it's going to happen. The thing is that he's now trying to modify and walk some things back because it hurt them. It's hurting Democrats. We played, Chris Coons, who was saying that, yeah, this is bad. He needs to stop it. Well, now, Pete Buttigieg, right?
Yes.
Buttigieg. Okay. Audio soundbite 5. He says, yeah, Bader is playing in the GOP. I like how they say, whenever you talk about going against the Constitution, you're playing into the Republicans' hands. What a bizarre spin. Listen to this.
Do you agree? Did Beto O'Rourke say something that's playing into the hands of Republicans?
Yes. Look, right now, we have an amazing moment on our hands. We have agreement among the American people for not just universal background checks, but we have a majority in favor of red flag laws, high-capacity magazines.
But you don't, though. So that's, this is how they ask, this is how they poll. They're like, okay, guys, are you, like, in favor of background checks? Yes or no? Do you think that the clipazines that kill millions of people should be reduced to not being that big? Yes or no? Should we mandate that you subtract 5? This is how, honestly, I'm surprised that no one has said this. I actually tried asking a lawmaker this once a year ago. Because they somehow thought the 15 in the AR-15 and like the 10 in the AR-10, that it was 5 more than 10, so the AR-15 was more powerful than the AR-10. I'm not making this up. I swear to you, hands to sky. I think it was on Twitchy. Because clearly that's not, right? Everyone out there who knows this is like, oh my gosh. For real, these are the people that are writing your gun laws. I'm like, oh wait, so it's 5 more ARs than the AR-10? So it's bigger? I can't. But what Bader did is he's blowing up their strategy and they're mad about it. And so now Bader's mad at Pete Buttigieg. And I just want to pop some popcorn and fight. I want to watch the two. Okay, so I am fascinated by this dynamic. Can we sidebar for a minute? Okay. So I kind of wish that Pete Buttigieg was better at strategy, understood math, rights, and was a conservative. Because he's funny. He's got a very dry sense of humor. And I really like people that have a dry sense of humor. I'm like, oh, you're also a smart ass? Come sit by me. If you don't have anything nice to say about anybody, come sit by me. But he's so clueless on rights and on the economy and on trade, etc. But it makes me mad that he's a Democrat. I just wish he wasn't. I wish he was a Republican. Makes me mad that he's a Democrat. And I look at him compared to Bader. Bader is like the poor man's Buttigieg. Also, I can't stand Pete's name because it is ridiculous to respond to say it. I never say it the same. I'm actually really trying now. Earlier I wasn't, and purposely so. But I can't do it. It's like I can't say snow snoot. I can't say that. I can't say snow suit fast. I can't. I can't say his name.
It's Snow Snoot.
Yeah, that's what happens.
Is that what happens?
Uh-huh.
So snowsuit is impossible.
If I say it slowly fast and with tons of purposeful enunciation, it's okay. Yeah.
Got it.
Anyway, when you look at Pete Pert versus Bader, you can't have two hipster white dudes in the same primary. That's like a leftist rule, that you can only have one hipster white dude in a group of people. Like a super, like, these are out of any of the two individuals that would take a record player into a coffee shop to just be pretentious, it would be these two, right? It would be these individuals who did it. I remember at the debate, what was it? When Joe Biden, I think this was his, I think it was his closing statement, I think perhaps, when he quoted Kierkegaard. And I thought, oh man, he did that before Pete Buttigieg. So Buttigieg is probably furiously scribbling out his name on his closing statement note. But you can't have two hipster dudes in the primary. You can't, because they just don't. It's just not going to happen. But Bader is the poor man's hipster. And by poor man, I don't mean in wealth. I mean just in intelligence and authenticity. Right? And Buttigieg is the nerdy, dorky kind of hipster who also is still pretentious. It's like, imagine this. Is there a store that's like Trader Joe's, but of lesser, right?
Like Whole Foods or something?
No. Like Whole Foods is apparently, that's why they call it Whole Paycheck, because it's the pinnacle.
Gotcha. And then Trader Joe's is a little less expensive than that?
Yes.
And then
but
Aldi's?
Is it Aldi's? I don't know. What's under Trader Joe's? I don't know. I'm just like, where can I go to get some chemicals in my food? I want to go to that store. Anyway, Bader would be the generic version of Trader Joe's, which is apparently more affordable than Whole Foods. And then Buttigieg is Whole Foods. See what I'm saying? I mean, he's still incredibly privileged. I mean, remember, this guy was speeding his Volvo down the highway. He's speeding in a Volvo, drunk, and almost killed some people, and then tried to run away. And I'm just assuming that his county judge daddy got him cleared of those charges. But also his dad had admitted before, and I think this was published in the New York Times, that the reason that he gave him the nickname Beto is because it would play well in politics down south by the border. His dad actually said this. It was in an interview. I have the story. I'll pull it up. Anyway, so now that Buttigieg, Mayor Pete, I'm just doing that. Now that Mayor Pete is disagreeing with Bader, Bader took exception of it and was trying to, he was trying to be civil, but you could just tell it was desperate. He was trying to tweet Mayor Pete and which rhymed, and somehow argue with him. But everyone's true. Everyone's right about this. He's blowing their strategy because he wants all the chips for himself. He has to be the desperate passion candidate because nobody gives a damn. This was a guy who did not endear women to him when he was going, yeah, I went on a road trip to go find myself and read some Vonnegut. I just, you know, left my wife at home with the kids. Huh? Oh, twice. Yeah. Two times he did that. Yeah. And I just remember thinking, that's lame. What is wrong with you? Grow up. Grow up, you skinny jean wearing fruit cake Bader. Grow up. It's like he has this like failure to launch thing. And at least Mayor Pete, I can't even believe only Bader would get me to talk about another Democrat candidate in a positive way. At least he seems like if your car breaks down, if you had to pick between two of those men who could take care of your car, it would be Mayor Pete, right? Bader wouldn't even know how to use the phone to call whatever service was going to get him. He wouldn't even know. I'm just saying. Anyway. So, the Kavanaugh story. And I was looking at this earlier, how many times I saw credibly accused. My friend David French over at National Review has a good piece where he fisks. Is the New York Times still not like that word or not? Because they were just fisked about this, all of this stuff happening with this story. They keep saying, oh, well, this was a credible accusation. Credible accusation. Bernie Sanders, credible accusation. A bunch of different reporters, credible accusation. Kamala Harris, credible accusation. Elizabeth Warren, credible accusation. They're all using this phrase. It is not, it has zero legal meaning. Credible is not a standard of proof. It just is not. That is not. And it's not. It's just simply not a standard of proof. French says, imagine for a moment that you're a lawyer investigating whether to take a case. Christine Blasey Ford has been in your office and told you a heartrending tale of a high school attack. But you do due diligence before taking a case, so you ask an associate to investigate. And when he does, he finds it does not support any single element of her story. None of the witnesses she puts forward back her account. Her own friend says she doesn't have any confidence in her story. Ford herself has differing accounts, which she did. And then what she says happened during the time of the attack and her therapist notes contain substantially different versions of the story. She doesn't release the complete set of therapist notes. She doesn't release the polygraph she took. She scrubbed her social media past. She's incredibly partisan. She has an ideological motivation for coming forward. She wants to fight to preserve Roe v. Wade. And none of every evidence undercuts her case. There's no corroborating evidence. And then he notes, Deborah Ramirez's claim is even weaker than Ford's. Because she told friends that Kavanaugh exposed himself and then that she wasn't sure that he exposed himself. And then no one was ever able to confirm that Kavanaugh was even at the party. And a bunch of witnesses completely contradicted Ramirez's stories. And then even the New York Times completely contradicted their own piece. And I read you that excerpt just a little bit ago. What in the world? There was nothing credible about her accusations. We got to be careful about this credibly accused stuff, folks. I'm telling you, this is madness. This is total madness. I'm just shocked at this. I'm not shocked at this. This is what they do. But they're going to try to. They want to impeach Kavanaugh. And they kept saying, oh, Republicans were so desperate. They were trying to stop Ramirez from testifying at Kavanaugh's confirmation hearings. And they demanded that the FBI not investigate. How much meth have you smoked? Because they spoke with 35 people. Ramirez refused 7 times for any interviews. The committee found 0 evidence. And 20 committee staffers were all investigating all of this. So, no. And Grassley says that none of this stuff was ever reported, you know, because it was so serious, apparently. This is asinine. We have a lot more in store coming up, including what the Democrat candidates are saying. Also, Corn Pop Joe. Woo! Gangster's name, Corn Pop. Makes me want that cereal. We're going to talk about that as well. We're also going to get in to some of the 2020 stuff. And Stephen Yates joins us next hour because this drone attack on a Saudi oil facility, some are describing it as a Pearl Harbor moment. How should Trump respond? Because Tehran says we're ready for war, and it shows maybe perhaps the potential fragility of the supply. So we're going to discuss that with him. We also have Florida Man. We have Today in Stupidity and a bunch of other stuff. Super Beats soft chews are so incredible. Actually, I haven't had mine today. I need to have them. I just literally reminded myself that. You know, I'm almost done with my one of my whole first bag. I'm pretty much done with. Ready? I think. Yeah. Dang. That's why I'm glad that when you buy 2, you get the third one free. The Super Beats soft chews, you get all the potent heart health benefits of Super Beats, but it's packed in 2. It's like, I don't know how to describe it. It's like a Starburst. It's candy. If you were freaked out about drinking Super Beats, then these soft chews are your jam. You can take them anywhere. They're wrapped like candy, for crying out loud. They taste like candy, for crying out loud. And it's made with a new breakthrough ingredient, grapeseed extract. And that supports normal blood pressure, circulation, natural energy in the body. Now, these grapes, they're highly concentrated premium grapes only from one place in the world, the Loire Valley in France. And it's a Chardonnay chew, ladies, you know, your little afternoon Chardonnay chew. The grapeseed extract that is used was clinically studied and shown to support healthy blood pressure levels. So boost your heart health easily and on the go with Super Beats soft chews. Get your soft chews today by visiting danasbeats.com. You can also call 800-664-5617. Buy 2 bags, they'll throw in the third for free. danasbeats.com, 800-664-5617.
Listen live around the world
at danaradio.com.
Rick Ocasek. What was it? The full moon that was on Friday the 13th was described as a harvest moon. And I keep thinking it's harvest time and sweater weather. It's 93 degrees here in Texas. This is not sweater weather. You will die. You will die outside. Die. It's insane. It's not sweater weather. Anyway, welcome back to the program. It's not technically even fall yet, right?
No, not yet.
Mm-mm. Yeah, it's not even fall. So coming up, I'm going to share with you some of the Democrat reactions to this Kavanaugh stuff. But can I just, because the New York Times, the New York Post is now hitting at the New York Times. They say the New York Times cringingly opined on its latest Brett Kavanaugh story in a series of bizarre tweets. And then they retracted it. They retracted the tweets, and then they retracted the retraction, and then they posted an apology. They said it because it all started yesterday evening. And apparently, it just all of it, all of this with this Deborah Ramirez story. So, oh my gosh. This is why people don't trust the, I shouldn't have to say it, but this is why people don't trust the press. If people want to do this again and relitigate this Kavanaugh stuff, I hope you realize how many people you are politicizing to the right. I mean, you could not do a better get out of the vote effort if you tried. So do it. Try it. Apparently, Bader didn't just, you know, Democrats don't want to just take your guns. They want to take your Supreme Court justices, too. Look at that. They don't realize what they're doing. And this was the weakest story of all of them. You know, the Clarence Thomas stuff, do you realize, and my late friend, I worked with him before Bannon, but Andrew Breitbart was completely politicized by the whole Clarence Thomas thing. He would not have ever gone into politics, I think, unless what happened with Clarence Thomas took place. I mean, one of my sons got even more politicized, more political because of the Kavanaugh stuff. People don't realize what they're doing. You are raising up a whole other generation of young men and women who are mad because they watch this unfairness in the headlines. If you want to do something like this here in a re-election, in election year, go right ahead and do it. But, I mean, this was the weakest story of all of them that came out. And the fact that this Ramirez and her attorneys were so sketch, they refused multiple times to even talk to the Senate Judiciary. They wouldn't even issue a written statement of her accusations to the Judiciary Committee that was investigating all of this in the first place. Just insane. We have a lot more in store coming up. Don't go anywhere. Second hour of The Dana Show. Stephen Yates joins us to discuss the latest. Stay with us.
This segment of The Dana Show podcast is brought to you by Kel-Tec. They don't make ordinary firearms. They invent better ones. Innovation, performance, Kel-Tec. Visit them at keltecweapons.com.
Welcome to the second hour of the show. At DLash on Twitter, official Dana Lash on Facebook as well. The president is going to be speaking soon at a Medal of Honor ceremony. And, of course, we're still following this, man, this fallout from this ridiculousness as it relates to Brett Kavanaugh and how what someone's saying to me is how they decided to take the weakest accusation and bring it back and attempt to relitigate it as though they haven't found anything new. And remember, this woman, this Deborah Ramirez that came out, and she came out after Christine Blasey Ford had given her testimony. She was like the last person to come out, and that was one of the least credible, too. She said that she was at a party and that she couldn't be sure, but she thinks maybe it was Brett Kavanaugh who was there, and he placed his male copulatory organ near her hand or in her hand or something like that. The New York Times ran with this ridiculous piece. Then they had to issue a retraction. Then they retracted the retraction, and then they published an apology, and they had to admit in their new editor's note that the book reports the female student didn't even want to be interviewed, and friends say she doesn't recall the incident. They can't recall the incident. No one could even place Kavanaugh at this particular party. He obviously denied it. And she refused multiple times to even meet with the Senate Judiciary investigating all of this and leading all of this with regards to the confirmation of Kavanaugh. And they didn't go to the FBI. And they also refused to provide even a written statement about her her accusations against Kavanaugh, even to the Senate Judiciary Committee. And then they now Democrats are trying to say that Republicans didn't want to investigate this because they knew all of this stuff. It's like they're literally that this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. She and her lawyers refused. Do they forget that there's like evidence and video and all kinds of stuff of this? Golly. So that's where we are right now.
I think cut 25 is pretty telling. Nancy kind of exposes how the Dems actually
I
was really surprised.
This is about
this.
As open as Bader. Listen.
Politics called the wrap-up smear. You smear somebody with falsehoods and all the rest, and then you merchandise it. And then you write it, and they'll say, see, it's reported in the press that this, and this. So they have that validation that the press reported the smear, and then it's called the wrap-up smear. Now I'm going to merchandise the press's report on the smear that we made. And it's a tactic, and it's self-evident.
Yeah, it's a tactic, and it's what they're doing right now. That's exactly what they're doing right now. And they also did this with anyone who dared to disagree with a Christine Blasey Ford or Deborah Ramirez, and they even went after people who were supportive of Brett Kavanaugh. So now you have Democrats who are demanding that Brett Kavanaugh be impeached. They are demanding it. A number of them. Kamala Harris said he must be impeached. She says he was put on the court through a sham process. His place on the court is an insult to the pursuit of truth and justice. Bader tweets, he lied under oath. He should be impeached. Bernie says, I support any appropriate constitutional mechanism to hold him accountable. They said Kavanaugh faced credible accusations. That's not even an actual evidentiary standard. Shut up. Cory Booker, he should be impeached. I call for impeachment proceedings to begin. Julian Castro, he should be impeached. Literally, I'm reading verbatim from their tweets. I'm not even saying those. Pete Buttigieg, Kavanaugh should resign and the House should impeach him. What? So here we go. This is what they want. They want him out. It is so amazing to see all of this built on the most just not credible accuser. You know, that victim, Deborah Ramirez, in that Kavanaugh story, says she doesn't have any memory of it at all whatsoever. Doesn't. And apparently the absence of any corroboration was not enough to influence Robin Pogren and Kate Kelly, the authors of or the reporters there that are focusing on this book. Remember Julie Swetnick? She was the other one. She was the one who said that she saw Kavanaugh or somebody. She was a grown woman, right? Mm-hmm. And she went to a teenage party and she saw Kavanaugh and people spiking punch and were like, what are you doing, a grown woman at a kid's party? What is wrong with you? Why didn't you say anything? And you apparently say that you went back repeatedly to different parties with all of them. What in the world is wrong with you? So that didn't actually pan out very well. But the guy who made the claim in the book, this book that's out about this now, and they're trying to redo this again, this guy named Max Steyer, he says, oh yeah, I saw it. And that's what they think is the newest bit of information that makes this totally credible now. Because Max Steyer, the guy who defended President Bill Clinton against Ken Starr, I mean, and he has an axe to grind because New York, because they were apparently let me pull this up. Because wasn't it when, because I believe Steyer also was defending Clinton and working with him, and they were pitted against each other, Federalist says, during the Whitewater investigation of the 90s, because Kavanaugh was working for Ken Starr at the time as Max Steyer was working for Clinton. So does anyone want to stop and think that maybe perhaps the guy who's claiming that he saw something maybe not be credible because he has an axe to grind against Brett Kavanaugh, because Brett Kavanaugh was working for Ken Starr at the same time that Max Steyer was defending Bill Clinton. And Bill Clinton had to settle with this one woman for about $1 million because she accused Clinton of exposing himself to her in a hotel room that she had been brought to. Remember that? Mm-hmm. Oh, and then don't forget Max Steyer's buddy David Kendall was the guy who defended Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Bill's wife, against mishandling, using that phrase, illegal and reckless handling of classified info. So remember it makes me think when Kavanaugh had mentioned, you know, revenge on behalf of the Clintons with all of this, if this, that makes sense then. Mm-hmm. So the Federalist has a piece up, and they say Steyer's claim that even two Democrat senators' offices didn't find worthwhile was that he had seen himself, a drunk Kavanaugh at a freshman year party, pants down. And Steyer's claim was that other people at the party put Kavanaugh's copulatory organ in the hands of a classmate. And then another unnamed person said, yeah, we may have remembered hearing about it. And that literally was their, that's what this whole book is based off of. But then the woman that apparently they said that other people put, it's so convoluted, I have to take a second. The woman that apparently other people were claimed to have put Kavanaugh's male copulatory organ into that woman's hands, she doesn't even remember it. And none of the friends have no idea what they're talking about. Oh my gosh. But this guy, Max Steyer. And when they wrote that piece at the New York Times, Pogren and Kelly, they left. They didn't even include Deborah Ramirez's denial that she doesn't remember anything that happens at all in the story. And it was also interesting that they didn't include that very important information that I think is very important about Max Steyer, the fact that this was a guy who, you know, has an axe to grind with Kavanaugh and also was a Clinton stooge. Hmm. So it just, just very, you know, just very curious, all of this stuff. All right. One of the other things that a couple of other things we're looking at, we're going to talk to Stephen Yates here in a little bit. The White House is expected to make some moves on some gun control packages, perhaps this week, or at least roll out some stuff this week. So we will they've been looking at a number of different things, whether it's how much tech is going to get involved. They were considering a phone app for background checks, which I think is, I don't know necessarily if I trust that. I don't, again, it's still, you're looking at creating a, I don't trust that that would be, because apps never get hacked or anything, you know. They said that one of the options in their discussions to is to have an app. So let me just look at this. So if you are trying to make the NICS check an app, you know, the NICS check, the problem isn't that there aren't ways to do it. The problem is that you have state agencies not submitting all full prohibited person records to the database. And then you have people who make simple paperwork errors. When everyone says Charleston loophole, there's literally no loophole. Do you realize that there was a paperwork error? Go and read the FBI statement that's still publicly available. It was put out by James Comey, who was then director of the FBI. And they actually said it was because one of the, and it was this female FBI or this female government worker who did not understand the geography. And apparently there were two towns with similar names. And it was something to that that ended up getting messed up that allowed that murderer in Charleston, who was a prohibited possessor, to purchase his firearm. And no waiting period would have changed that. They didn't even discover it until the massacre took place and they began investigating. It would have never have been discovered. So the idea that somehow a waiting, that's idiotic. It was literal human error. So having a waiting period is not going to fix human error. Having an app is not going to solve that problem either. And you already have something like a third of these, actually, I think more, maybe even two thirds of them are false positive denials. So how, I think an app makes it worse. That just makes it worse and overtaxes a system. I mean, at least in my some of the other things that they're looking at, allowing minors' records to be included in background check databases. alerting local authorities when someone fails a background check, which is what's already done anyway. Applying bigger penalties for straw purchases. Actually, I'm okay with that. Instituting a gun ban on purchases for people on terror watch lists. I am not for that, and here's why. Because anyone can be put on a terror watch list. If there was a criteria, look, if you can be put on a terror watch list, and if you're going to strip someone of a right, if you can strip people of rights and use that as a penalty, then you have enough evidence to arrest or charge them. So do that. This is just, again, that's just another way to undermine due process. If you have enough evidence to ban someone, to strip them of a natural right, you have enough evidence to charge or arrest them. Do it. Do that then. They want to increase the penalty for people who lie on 4473s. They have the red flag laws in there. I mean, improving mental health services. They want to expedite the death penalty. I think death penalties everywhere should be expedited and not just for convicted mass shooters. They want to add additional government records to an existing database, the existing background check database, which I want. What are those records? So we're going to get into all of that as well here coming up. We have Stephen Yates this hour, and my gosh, still a lot of stuff to discuss. As we get going towards the bottom of the hour here, Patriot Mobile is my mobile phone service. I've used them for a number of years now, and it's great, crystal clear, nationwide coverage. And the thing that I like the most is that my money is supporting those, a company that supports my beliefs. I'm not actually funding my opposition and funding gun control and Planned Parenthood simply by doing business with Patriot Mobile. You get, like I said, reliable nationwide service, no hidden fees. They donate a portion of their profits to organizations that fight for First and Second Amendment rights. Right now, you can buy a Moto Z3 Playphone for just $5 a month, limited time offer. And you can get unlimited plans starting as low as $25 a month. So call 1-877-367-7524. That's 877-367-7524. Or you can visit patriotmobile.com/Dana. It's patriotmobile.com/Dana.
It's the Dana Show.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss.
It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
All right, here. Oh, my whole computer is frozen and shutting down. I know. Yay. All right. So we're going to have Stephen Yates, who's going to be joining us here just a little bit later on in the program. And I'm not able to access any of my headlines because everything's shutting down. So no. So we'll make sure that we get into that. And I'm going to make up the headline section here coming up. But Stephen Yates is going to be joining us next segment to discuss the drone attack that was happening that took place in Saudi Arabia, where they went after an oil facility. And as a result, ended up, now it's this huge international incident. And Russia's warning. Tehran says they're ready for war. So many things are happening. So we're gonna get into all of that. We're also going to discuss some of the fallout as well. And who's going to be replacing John Bolton in the president's administration. We're going to get into that. And we'll also discuss, I'm going to have to get his opinion with regards to the Kavanaugh story as well. We'll have to get into that.
Did you mention Corn Pops yet?
We're going to discuss the whole, that was the weirdest story. That's out of all so of good. The weird stories that Joe Biden has suggested. That has been that was the weirdest story that he's discussed while he was on a campaign stop. He was at a pool, and there were all these like kids around him that were getting ready to go swim, and he was talking about a gangster named Corn Pop. And there are a lot of black journalists that say, I don't know if I necessarily believe this old white guy telling me that there was a gangster named Corn Pop back in the day. And then apparently that he like was challenging Joe Biden because Joe Biden was a lifeguard at this pool, and Joe Biden had a 6-foot length of chain cut for him right there on the spot that he said he was going to go wrap around Corn Pop's head. It's the weirdest story ever, but we're going to play that for you coming up. We have a lot more to get into, but we're going to go to break here, and we're going to have Stephen Yates here coming up as well.
But seriously, this is also what Joe Biden said, and it's just really short, but listen.
Are you committed to releasing your medical records to address concerns?
Yes. I don't have what the hell concerns, man. You want to wrestle?
He challenged someone to wrestling because they questioned his health.
That seems about right. That's about right? Yeah. Apologies for the massive technical things here. So you were robbed of headlines. But we have Stephen Yates coming up, so don't go anywhere.
This portion of The Dana Show is brought to you by Kel-Tec. They don't make ordinary firearms. They invent better ones. Innovation, performance, Kel-Tec. Visit them at keltecweapons.com.
Certainly hope that the people of Israel make a different decision. And my hope is that they recognize that his existence, his policies, his rhetoric really is contradictory to the peace that we are all hoping that that region receives and receives soon. Just right now, if you look at the annexation that's taking place, for many of us in Congress, there has been a long-standing support for a two-state solution. Mm-hmm. And this annexation now is going to make sure that that peace process does not happen.
That's not the right, nothing is. So Ilhan Omar is essentially saying, well, Netanyahu's, his presence here on planet Earth somehow contradicts peace. Yet she pushes the boycott, divestment, sanction for Israel, which they want to boycott them out of existence because they're Jewish. And she's supportive of that. So there you have it. Joining me right now, because we have a number of just not just that, but really the latest happening with Saudi Arabia. And of course, another ship was apparently seized in the Strait of Hormuz. It just feels like a powder keg's about to go off. Stephen Yates is a foreign policy expert. He previously advised VP Dick Cheney during the Bush administration, in which he was an integral part of that administration. And he travels everywhere. We've gotten some of his time today, and we're so glad that we did. Stephen, always such a pleasure to talk to you right out of the gate here, because I think everybody was, although with all the Kavanaugh stuff, I think it kind of, that seems to be eating up all of the media headlines. However, in looking, first off, Iran seized another oil tanker in the Strait of Hormuz. The Gulf crisis is getting worse. Then there is the situation with Saudi Arabia and this energy production system that suffered a drone attack. And some people were labeling it as the Saudis' Pearl Harbor moment. And Iran is, this is ongoing between Saudi Arabia and Iran. And I'm just wondering, because Trump has, at this point, he's added a lot of financial pressure on Iran. There's been tons of sanctions. What else? I mean, what way should Trump respond to this? What way should this be handled? Should he even respond? I mean, what is your, because it seems every week it just, I don't know how much more it can ratchet up without spilling over into just full armed conflict.
Well, where there is the risk of it spilling over into conflict, and that decidedly is not where the president wants to go. I mean, he's made very, very clear the kind of president he campaigned to be, and the kind of power he wants America to be is not in the regime change, nation building business. At the same time, the Iranians have been actively engaged in provoking and attacking pretty much since the hostages were taken in 1979. And so we've not been the driving force. They've been the provocateurs, and they continue to provoke. Now, as I look at what's happening today, I don't necessarily look at financial markets and find truth all the time, but the financial markets seem to be assuming that whatever economic impact of the drone hit is going to have on oil is going to get worked out, and that they don't expect the president's going to overreact to this Iranian provocation, which is basically the world expects that the Iranians, as they have almost every time, are just going to get away with it. That right. concerns me. I don't want to get into conflict and war, but at the same time, I worry very much about a theocratic regime that can act with impunity in this way.
Yeah, there is a fear that if there's nothing done, that they'll be emboldened to continue. Now, they had said that the strikes on these oil facilities, that it was a result of what they claimed was Saudi aggression in the country, which I mean, that could be defined as just Iran is mad that Saudi Arabia has a little bit more influence than they do at this particular time. I mean, I would think that Saudi Arabia has A, the ability to handle it themselves, but also B, if this was Iran's attempt to show some fragility in the supply system, I think it failed. So this all just looks bad on them.
I agree with that. The problem is that we don't control the dominant narrative out there about people who just want to see everything as some kind of evidence that Trump has failed. or that America is going to fail, because that seems to be the, just the knee-jerk reaction. But but systematically and substantively, the oil markets are going to adjust, and we're going to be okay. And the fact that America defeated the defeatists in our own country and decided we were going to be able to produce more of our own energy, we still import a lot. We shouldn't be ignorant about that, but we are much, much more self-reliant than we've ever been. So we're in a stronger position. We'll ride this out. Our markets will ride this out. The Saudis do have abilities. And one of the policies of the president I most strongly agree with is that our allies in the region, they need to be carrying a fair share of burden, risk and reward. So I think it's proper for the U.S. to wait to see what exactly the Saudis have in mind to do for themselves before we decide whether we're a part of that coalition or not. The U.S. shouldn't be the sole actor jumping in first.
Completely agree. And to that point, because this is where the state of diplomacy and foreign policy is, we have Tulsi Gabbard, who, for some reason, there are some conservatives who think that she is fantastic, and I keep reminding them she's still a socialist, and you know, we still got to be careful. This is what she actually tweeted this, which I was a little surprised at. She tweeted this yesterday about 10 p.m. With regards to these attacks on these oil facilities. She says, quote, "Trump awaits instructions from his Saudi masters. Having our country act as Saudi Arabia's bitch is not America first," end quote. Your thoughts on that, Stephen?
Well, kudos to her for lightening the world with the B word. New addition to the lexicon for the presidential candidates running for the Democratic nomination. I don't know if the Democrats can sort of sort themselves out of a lunch bag at this point. On the one hand, they hate Trump and all Republicans in some cases because we say it should be America first and we should push our interests as a higher priority and the world needs to accommodate us because we're powerful and we should use the power while we have it. And at the same time, so they're saying, oh, well, that's wrong. We need to listen to the world and accommodate the world. Okay. So her solution is to throw out some spicy words and do what exactly? So is she now saying the Democratic Party is going to get behind strikes against Iran? Does she want to strike Iran and Saudi Arabia just to make it a clean sweep across the Middle East? I mean, there's no coherence to what this response is. It's basically sensationalism for its own sake.
Yeah, very much so. And last but not least, always checking in with the ongoing strike, well, the ongoing oppression from China towards Hong Kong. I saw a bunch of reports of tear gas that was used against protesters over the weekend. And the protesters are still, they're still holding their ground. I guess for some reason, it just seems like Beijing, I guess, thought that Hong Kong protesters were going to give up a lot earlier and were going to get tired of this. But, you know, when people get a taste of freedom, that's not something that you so easily forget and that you're not going to so easily go back to any kind of oppression. Tell me your thoughts on the latest, and at what point will other people, do you think, weigh in on China's behavior towards these peaceful, really, protesters?
Well, it remains a very, very important issue. I think it's one of the most important strategic issues in the world, because what's happening in Hong Kong has lessons for us, because what they're standing up for is freedom and rule of law, the institutions of a free society, things that they were promised. And so they're not asking for things they don't have. They're asking for preservation of the things they do have. And what the Communist Party of China is doing to undermine those institutions in Hong Kong will be done towards Taiwan, will be done towards Japan and other allies of the United States, but also fine-tuned to be used against us. So they're actively going to try to manipulate the outcome of a Taiwan election in January of next year. And what they learn from that, they'll probably try to undermine an election right here in the U.S. of A. Very much so, even though it doesn't get talked about or analyzed that much, what's at stake in Hong Kong affects us directly in the near term in dealing with what I consider to be the most murderous political party ever to grace the planet.
Yeah, there you go. Stephen Yates, always appreciate your time. Thank you so much for weighing in on these issues, and safe travels to you.
Thank you, Dana. Take care.
Of course. We have a lot more in store, including the Women's March announcing that they are cutting ties with Linda Sarsour and Tamika Mallory and Bob Bland over anti-Semitism. But wait until you see who they are putting in their place. Wow. Yeah. If you thought it was, I mean, maybe an upgrade in anti-Semitism, or maybe it's like a lateral move, I guess. We're going to have that and so much more on the way. And we're also going to get into some Florida Man, so don't miss out. If you are in the market for wireless earbuds, obviously you want to get the best out there. You want to get premium wireless earbuds, something that not only has great sound and isn't just all name and no quality, but you want to get something that's comfortable also. And again, affordable. You need to check out the new premium wireless earbuds from Raycon. First off, Raycon earbuds start at about half the price of any other premium wireless earbuds on the market, but they sound amazing. I listen to audio, you know, all throughout the day. I wear cans on my ears for my job 3 hours a day, every single day, well, Monday through Friday. And then I wear earbuds whenever I travel. And I have always had a problem with finding comfortability and also being able to hear things, particularly if you are on an airplane, because not everybody wants to wear cans on an airplane. I really love the Raycon E50s. They have a bunch of different varieties depending on what your activity that you are in the most, you know, whatever it is that you do the most. The Raycon E50s, I think all of them really have changed the game. They're comfortable. Take them anywhere. I think the charge lasts for forever. I forget exactly how long it was, but I swear to you, it was like a week. I didn't even charge my, and then they finally went dead on me when I was at the gym and recharged them super fast, but they sound amazing. I mean, when I'm on a plane and I'm have my Raycons in, I actually can hear the audio on my earbuds. Good luck if you're wearing Apple earbuds and you're on a plane. Ain't gonna happen. You ain't gonna hear nothing. But with the Raycons, I can't. Here's the other thing that really I think improves on the sound and the comfortability. They send you different size gel inserts with them. So you snap them on the earbuds. They make them super comfortable, but it also acts as an additional layer of noise cancellation. There's no annoying stems, no wires. They look great. They're discreet. I think they're awesome. I love them. I think that they're the best wireless earbuds out there. You can get 15% off the already low price of Raycon wireless earbuds because they're half the price of the other snotty, overpriced, pretentious versions. Just go to buyraycon.com/Dana. That's buyraycon.com/Dana.
A higher caliber of talk. Get Dana on demand through iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
I have to tell you, it's always interesting when you have politicians who have been regular guests on this radio program and who have always been very eager to reach out and pitch topics for our consideration for airtime, suddenly grow very shy and silent when we ask them to come on air with us and discuss either their stated support for red flag laws and the quote-unquote universal background checks, or to discuss their silence on the issue thus far. Now, I don't want to name names yet, and I'm not trying to be a bully here, but I think it is a lack of transparency when lawmakers try to play this game with voters. And I don't really like that. And it would be very easy for me and very advantageous for me to just go along with it and make them easy in their, what looks like to us, dodging of the issue and have that easy access, you know, and still be classified by their staffs as a friendly. But I don't know how many times I have to tell y'all, and I don't know when people are going to start taking me seriously. I don't care about making friends. I didn't make friends with people to build the platform that I have, and I sure as hell am not interested in keeping people, trying for me to keep on their good side. I think that these politicians need to worry about being on your all's good side, and I just look at myself as a conduit for that. You guys have questions, you email me, you ask me, well, what does this individual think? What does Senator Ted Cruz think? Or what is, what does Representative Crenshaw think? And Crenshaw, even though he and I disagree on some issues, he was, I think he did it right. And he came on and we discussed them. And that's how you do it. But there have been some other lawmakers that, I mean, these people have always, they reach out to us more than we've ever reached out to them. And now they're going silent when we reach out and say, hey, We want to ask you about this. So I'm waiting for some responses on emails, but then I think it's actually newsworthy to start asking questions as to why certain lawmakers are dodging this issue, particularly when I'm hearing from y'all so much on this. And I think that you deserve answers to those questions. So, and I'm happy to ask them. So that's where we are. And I'll keep you updated on that. In the meantime, let's kick it into some Florida Man.
It's time for Florida Person. It's time to check what Florida is up to.
This guy made me so mad. I don't even really like sharks. When you make me feel bad for a shark, that's when, I mean, I don't like them because they're terrifying. Think about it. You're in the water with something that has lots of teeth and giant jaws. Pretty scary, right? But I don't like this. A Florida man helped drag a shark to its death. It was tied to the back of a speedboat. This guy is going to be jailed for 10 days, all of which can be served on weekends. Robert Lee Bo Bennick was one of three men who filmed themselves laughing as they dragged the shark near Egmont Key, in June 2017. And then they were accused of animal lynching. The shark died. Footage soon emerged of the same men shooting at sharks and pouring alcohol down the throats of fish that were still alive. So they faced felony charges. Yeah, I think they should be in a lot of trouble for this. I don't like this stuff. This is not being a good steward of your environment. This is moronic. So this one guy, they said that they were allowed to plea down to misdemeanor charges of aggravated cruelty to animals. And they got 11 months probation, 250 hours of community service. They can do it in a animal shelter as well. Charges were dropped against the third dude. I wouldn't allow them to play down. Nope. I have zero tolerance for that stuff. It costs nothing, and there's no effort for you to be a decent person. Nothing. So this made me mad. I'm not even going to watch the video. And I don't even like sharks. Look at y'all. You're making me feel bad about a shark. That's how ignorant some people are. Okay, so moving on. Golly, I'm not going to watch that video. That video's bad. So this couple here. We got another story of a Florida man fighting off an alligator. And then we also have a Florida man who reported an income of $18,000. And the IRS sent him a refund of $1 million. But it was like $980,000, I believe, is what it was. And Tampa Bay Times has reported it. They said that the IRS seized a Lexus and $900,000 from this Tampa man. He got this huge refund. And it didn't end happily, but he electronically submitted the self-prepared income tax return. He listed his occupation as freelancer, and he said he got $17,000 in wages on his W-2 and $1 million of federal income tax withholding. And so anyway, long story short, he deposited the money into two accounts in SunTrust. After he was caught, he was very open and honest about it. Like, yeah, okay, I did it. And maybe you should see, that's all your money. They're going to have to fight to get it all back, too. We have a lot more in store. Third hour next. Stay with us.
Judge Kavanaugh is one of the finest people that I've ever known. He's an outstanding intellect, an outstanding judge, respected by everybody. Never had even a little blemish on his record. The FBI has, I think, gone through a process 6 times with him over the years where he went to higher and higher positions. He is somebody very special. At the same time, we want to go through a process. We want to make sure everything is perfect. Everything is just right. I wish the Democrats could have done this a lot sooner because they had this information for many months and they shouldn't have waited till literally the last days. They should have done it a lot sooner. But with all of that being said, we want to go through the process. One thing I will say is that, as I understand it, Judge Kavanaugh spent quite a bit of time with Senator Feinstein, and it wasn't even brought up at that meeting, and she had this information. So you would have thought certainly that she would have brought it up at the meeting, not wait till everything's finished and then have to start a process all over again. But with all of it being said, we want to go through a full process. I have great confidence in the U.S. Senate and in their procedures and what they're doing, and I think that's probably what they're going to do. They'll go through a process and hear everybody out.
And there you go. The president weighing in on the Kavanaugh situation. He also tweeted out about how basically, you know, these are individuals looking to, quote, destroy and influence opinions, but played the game badly. They should be sued, end quote. Welcome to the third hour of the program at DLash on Twitter, official Dana Lash on Facebook. And the lack of journalistic ethics, I think, has I kind of wonder now if we're not in. I'm trying to figure out the best way to say this. And I was thinking about this on break as I was pulling up some of the prep that I have for the segment. If I don't want to say a post news era, but is it a post journalism era? Right? Because I think for readers and for viewers now, because of everything that we know, and because now we know how the sausage is made, you know, it is difficult for us. I know it's difficult for me anymore to watch almost any report or read almost any report without having in the back of my mind questions about the author's motivation or the reporter's motivation beyond simply making the public aware of a particular story.
Post integrity.
Yeah. Well, no, I think that, yeah, that's a good way to do it. Post integrity. Yeah. Even if it's, for instance, a simple AP story, I immediately think of, okay, well, what is the real motivation here? What ultimately would be the purpose, aside from making the public know, aware of it, what would be the purpose of having the story published or aired or whatever? And the fact that there was so little consideration of this Max Steyer in this story. So it was the piece in the New York Times was like an intro and then an excerpt from this anti-Kavanaugh book that's coming out by these two authors, Robin Pogrebin and Kate Kelly. And they decided to reanimate the carcass of the Deborah Ramirez allegations because this guy, Max Steyer, who said he was a Yalie, a fellow Yalie, a classmate, he saw Kavanaugh with his pants down at a drunken dorm party. And he volunteers this information now after the fact in this book. And so that is really what all of the new, renewed, I should say, interest in the least credible accusers, because she, by her own words, said she couldn't recall anything and she couldn't even be sure. And she doesn't even know if Kavanaugh was there, and none of her friends remember it ever even happening. The fact that they didn't even include that in the New York Times piece, that wasn't even included. The New York Times had to go back. They retracted it. Then they retracted the retraction. Then they apologized. I'm trying to remember the correct order. And then they added that apology with that updated information that the reported victim in the story couldn't even remember it happening, couldn't even be sure, et cetera, et cetera. But that modification didn't include the motive that might be driving Max Steyer. Now, as we discussed last hour, Max Steyer, I think this is important, right? Why would this guy come forward now? I mean, where is this guy coming from? It's interesting to note that he was pitted against Kavanaugh during the Whitewater era, and he also represented Bill Clinton during all the Lewinsky stuff and all of that. He was opposing Kenneth Starr. And you remember Brett Kavanaugh worked with Ken Starr during that entire time. So Brett Kavanaugh and Max Steyer were actually working against each other during that period of time. And that seems to me very important to know as we consider whether or not this individual is credible. Now, here's something else that I think is important to know about this Max Steyer individual, particularly as it relates to his wife, who had worked for the Obama era or Obama administration. She was under the Obama administration. She was nominated. She met her husband at Stanford. She was nominated by Barack Obama. This was because Steyer divorced his first wife in 2004. He married Stanford law student Florence Upan, and they met at Stanford, where they both received law degrees. They got married not long after. So she was clerking for the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York, and she was nominated by Barack Obama to be a federal judge for the U.S. District Court, right? So she was nominated by Obama to the federal bench in 2016. But it was described as her nomination expired, and it was all blamed on Mitch McConnell. So I think that's kind of also important to, if you're trying to consider everything, and it is unfair to not consider the credibility of the individual who may be making an accusation, and to limit only yourself to the credibility of the person against whom the accusation is made. That to me seems as though it is incredibly important to take in to just with all the other facts out there, because that shows some sort of politically driven animus, correct? Doesn't that show that this individual, upon whom ultimately this entire book is built upon, that this, to me, it seems that it's politically motivated, and he's doing this to get revenge, just to be frank. Right? Especially when you consider, once again, the victim can't remember it. None of the friends can remember it. Other people say that does not even sound right. I mean, I'm just going back to when we were on air and covering all of this, and we looked at every single one of these accusers. And remember, Deborah Ramirez, if Max Steyer thought it was so important, why did he never report it to the FBI? You know, he never reported it to the FBI, nor did he ever even report it to the Judiciary Committee that was leading the investigation into Kavanaugh while these hearings were taking place. Now, I think that that's pretty important to note. In fact, Chuck Grassley, I think it was early this morning. He went on this Twitter thread. Essentially, what he said was that they had over 35 people working on that. No, they spoke to over 35 people. Sorry, they interviewed over 35 people. They had over 20 staff members researching and basically trying to interdepartmentally doxing everything and trying to figure out, uncovering. I mean, when you have that many operatives working on this stuff, then somebody's going to find something. These were investigators. These were operative folks. So they were looking at all of this, trying to uncover something, and they couldn't find anything. And Grassley even noted that 7 times they asked to speak, and they offered her what they originally did with Blasey Ford. Remember how Ford wasn't going to go out and testify, and they offered to fly to her and do all of this stuff. Do you remember how ridiculous that was, just to get her there to testify? Oh my gosh. Well, they offered the same thing to Ramirez. They're like, we'll go to you. You can come to us. We'll do it privately. You don't have to do it publicly, et cetera, et cetera. She ignored them. 7 times they asked to speak with her, to interview her. And if you're going to make or allow yourself to be used to make an accusation against someone, the people who are doing the investigation, you can't say that they didn't do their due diligence when you were the one who refused outright to even speak to them. And that's what happened. Like, she wouldn't, 7 times they refused. Not only, and get this, not only did they refuse to have her speak to the Senate Judiciary Committee, but they also refused to even so much as provide a written account of her accusations against Kavanaugh. And they said that they contacted her lawyers. It first broke in the New Yorker. That story didn't break because someone notified the Senate Judiciary Committee. It didn't break because someone notified the New Yorker. Someone decided to, they told the FBI, someone notified the New Yorker and they did a story. And then that's how Grassley and the Senate Judiciary learned about it. So that, coupled with the seven times they asked to interview Ramirez and she said no, the fact that they interviewed, they went around her then and interviewed 35 people who all had been suggested as being a part of this or witness to it, and not a single one of them corroborated it. Not only that, but they had over 20 investigators looking into this and researching it, and they found absolutely nothing. You cannot say, and this is what Democrats and their Democrat surrogate media have been pushing all day, knowing all of this, there is no legitimate way that you can say Republicans tried to stop this woman from testifying. And that is literally what they have been pushing. They did not try to stop her. She and other Democrats did. So how in the world are you going to gaslight people into thinking that the ones who did the most to uncover the truth were somehow against the truth getting out? This is nothing but, it is an absolute, it's a witch hunt. They're trying to ruin and undermine faith in the Supreme Court, just like they tried to undermine faith in your elections. This is dangerous. So we got a lot of other stuff to touch on. Oh, and I got some headlines. One of them is going to make you mad. It made me furious. I need to get my soft shoes. I still haven't gotten them. I'm going to go do it right after this. So Superbeats soft shoes, just let me tell you, if you have been resistant to Superbeats the drink, then they sat down and they're like, let's make soft shoes for these people. So this is what the soft shoes are. Also, moms out there, they're your little Chardonnay shoes because they're legit made with Chardonnay grapes. I'm not even kidding you. It gives you all the potent heart health benefits of Superbeats. It's packed in two convenient, really delicious soft shoes. It's like Starburst. I'm not even kidding you. You can take them wherever you go. Take them with you. And it has a new breakthrough ingredient, grapeseed extract. It supports normal blood pressure, circulation, natural energy in the body. They use these highly concentrated premium grapes that are fancy grapes. They come from the Loire Valley in France. And I actually researched that. That's like a really fancy area, by the way. And their grapes, they're really particular about their grapes. Like, you have to be a certain grape, award-winning grape. Like, they have like the genealogy of the grapes, for crying out loud. Anyway, The grapeseed extract that is in Superbeats new soft chews was clinically studied. It's shown to support healthy blood pressure. Tastes great. Easy to eat. It's so good. It's like candy. If you purchase two bags, they throw in the third bag for free, which is great for somebody like me because I already ate my free bag. That's how I look at it. I still have two other bags to go. So boost your heart health easily and on the go with Superbeats soft chews. Get your soft chews today by visiting danasbeats.com or call 800-664-5617. When you buy two bags, they'll throw in the third for free. danasbeats.com, 800-664-5617.
It's the Dana Show.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss.
It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
All right, so this is a horrible headline. This is absolutely inexcusable. The State Department sent our sweet explosive detection dogs to Jordan despite evidence of cruel mistreatment, according to a new report published by the Washington Post today. I'm not even going to... If you see the link, don't click on it, but be outraged at your lawmakers because the dogs look really bad. I can't unsee some of this stuff. The dogs look bad. They said that... at least 10 of the 100 dogs sent to Jordan between 2008 and 2016 died from various medical problems. Others were living in horribly unhealthy conditions. They were beaten, abused. The dogs lacked medical care, any kind of sanitary living environment, appropriate training, clean water, all of it. And yeah, so they said that the CVC's, the Canine Validation Center's recommendation, they needed to give medical training to Jordanian veterinarians and send U.S. veterinarians to assist. But they said that since 2016, the State Department gave 66 dogs to Jordan despite the knowledge of this. I think that crap needs to stop now. Not another dog given to this country. No. Oh my gosh, I'm livid. You guys know how I am about dogs. I mean, I will cut you. This is infuriating. Oh, my heart's broken. Moving on, as we got a lot of other headlines here. Drinking a cup of tea a day is apparently very, very good for your brain, according to not one. This is actually, there was a study released 2 years ago on this. Now there's a new one. They said they looked at several dozen adults 60 or above. They did cognitive tests. They did MRIs. And they studied them drinking green, black, or some other tea. Oolong tea? I'm not familiar with that one. They said volunteers who drink tea at least 4 times a week had a demonstrable evidence of more connected brains. Wow. Tea? Okay, so I'm going to start drinking tea regularly, and I'm going to get my Superbeet soft juice kicked in here. Coming up next, the Women's March drama. We've got that and more. Stick with us.
Entertaining, educational, and relentless. Get your on-demand dose of Dana. Listen live at danaradio.com.
That it makes a difference. This was the diving board area, and I was one of the guards, and there were not. There was a 3-meter board. And you fell off sideways, you landed on the darn cement over there. And Corn Pop was a bad dude. And he ran a bunch of bad boys. And I did. And back in those days, you see how things have changed. One of the things you had to use, if you used pomade in your hair, you had to wear a bathing cap. And so he was up on the board, wouldn't listen to me. I said, hey, Esther, you, off the board, or I'll come up and drag you off. Well, he came off. And he said, I'll meet you outside. My car, these were all public housing behind it. My car, there was a gate out here. I parked my car outside the gate. And he said, I'll be waiting for you. He was waiting for three guys in straight razors. Not a joke. There was a guy named Bill Wright, Mouse, the only white guy, and he did all the pools. He was the mechanic. And I said, what am I going to do? He said, come down here in the basement. Where mechanics, where all the pool filter is. You know the chain, there used to be a chain that went across the deep end. And he cut off a 6-foot length of chain. He folded up, he said, you walk out with that chain. And you walk to the car and say, you may cut me, man, but I'm going to wrap this chain around your head. I said, you kidding me? He said, no, if you don't come back. And he was right. So I walked out with the chain. And I walked up to my car. And they had, in those days, you used to remember the straight razors, you'd bang them on the curb, get them rusty, put them in a rain barrel, get them rusty. And I looked at them, but I was smart then.
Joe
Biden. First of all, I said, when I tell you get off the board, you get off the board, and I'll kick you out again, but I shouldn't have called you, Esther Williams. I apologize for that.
Oh, my gosh.
I apologize, but I didn't know that apology was going
to work. Longest soundbite ever in the history of the world. I had to play some jibs there. I had a place at St. Louis. I had a place in Jersey.
Corn Pops is part of this complete breakfast.
Okay, I don't know where to start. Welcome back to the show. I'm Dana Lash. We're going to try to get through this segment. Oh my gosh. So if you missed somehow the Joe Biden story while he was on the campaign trail. So he was at this pool in Delaware, and he was talking about how he wanted, and I was reading some of the black journalists writing about this. He, Joe Biden, a white man back in like, what, 60, decided to go work at a pool. It was a black pool so he could learn more about black people. And there was, who was it? One black journalist who said, I kid you not, that's a quote. What he said, I'm like, oh my gosh. So, and he was talking about how a gang leader whose name was Corn Pop.
Wow. I gotta have my pop.
Gotta have your pops. Corn Pop decided to give him some trouble. And I'm gonna raise my hand. I had to Google Esther Williams. Did not know who that was. Google it. Swimmer, like big famous swimmer. And he's like, you're not Esther. Get off that board. And he's like, I'm sorry for calling you Esther Williams. Do you believe that that man had a chain cut for him right there and went out and was threatening this gang member named Corn Pop? I mean, are we to believe that there are nefarious gang members back in the 60s named Corn Pop running around Delaware?
Yeah, putting their straight razors in rain barrels to make sure they rust.
Yeah. I mean, what in the world is that? What is that, by the way? I mean, that's also so crazy. It gets crazier. It's like hearing Grandpa Simpson tell a story. And so the other thing that really got to me that, or that stuck out to me, and apparently a lot of other people. There were there was one Delaware reporter who decided, you know, for fun and giggles, to go and look at what was the racial makeup of this particular town where this pool was at, because Joe Biden said, you know, I wanted to learn more about Black Americans, so I went to work at this pool, and he's like, some of them probably never even talked to a white guy before. Well, this reporter went and looked at the racial makeup of that town at that exact time, and it was 73% white. So it's like, how could you say that? Oh my gosh. I don't know. Maybe it happened. Maybe it's like a fishtail. Maybe it's like they, I don't know.
Is it taken from West Side Story or anything like that?
It seems like it, right?
You know what I mean?
Sharks and the Jets. Did maybe something happen, and then now he's just blown it up all these years later?
I think the true part of that story was, if you wear pomade in your hair, you have to wear a skull cap.
Is that why all the dudes back then wore the caps?
Yeah.
Because of pomade?
Because you had grease in your hair.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
So it stands to reason the rest of the story's true.
Well, or maybe it's like that story that he was telling about, that dude, because he messed up two stories about the guy that he had to pin, and he kept saying that it was in Afghanistan. Well, he said it was Iraq, but apparently it was Afghanistan, and he basically combined two separate stories together into one. So technically it happened, but not like that.
Maybe he watched a chain gang on TV while eating Corn Pops, and then that's probably where the confusion came in.
Every single thing about Corn Pops popped into my head. Well, I was, oh man, last night I looked up all these old Corn Pop commercials. I haven't had Corn Pops in forever.
The pop sensation of Kellogg's Corn Pop cereal. Golden nuggets of corn popped up sweet and light. A popping great part of this nutritious breakfast.
Actual Corn Pop. I gotta get up, yeah, I gotta get up. What's this Corn Pop song? When he showed up at the pool with Joe. Oh my gosh. I don't know. I swear, please, and I'm being so genuine, if Joe Biden is a nominee, please let this story come up on the debate stage. Please, for the love of all things holy, I will be
sweet,
so good. I'll be so good. Like, I won't do what I usually do every Halloween and get a bag of candy corn and put it in my candy dishes and then eat all of it and accuse my youngest child of doing it. I won't do that.
Oh, you won't?
No, I will be so well behaved. I'm sorry. What was that?
That was me putting the brakes on.
That was really horrible.
Candy corn.
Candy corn's the official candy of Halloween. What's the matter with you?
It's fun size stuff. And by the way, there's nothing fun about a tiny candy
bar. No, tiny candy bar is like punishment.
What's that of a fun size? Who came up with that?
Who doesn't like candy corn?
Me?
You know, that's like literally what they use to test and see if somebody's a communist.
No, they don't.
They throw you in the river to see if you float. Oh, wait, is that a witch test?
That's a Joe Biden story you're telling right now.
No, they say, here's some candy corn and apple pie, and we're going to make you watch baseball. So... And if you don't like these things, you're clearly a communist.
I don't know if that's true.
That is what I heard.
They're just too sugar. It's like too much. Candy corn?
Mm-hmm.
They used to have, when I was a kid, I used to like them because they actually tasted kind of good. But now they're just, I don't know what they are. They're like sugar wax. I don't even like it.
Well, I tell you what. It's just all so ridiculous.
Corn pop, though.
Corn pop. But the thing is he was telling this long story, and do y'all notice the kids that were standing around him? They had their goggles, like they were ready to swim.
Right.
And this man would not shut up to let these kids swim. They were all standing there, and you could see even some of the moms and some of the teenagers in the back were like, is this man going to shut up?
His story sounded like an old story to me.
That
and
story,
I'm in my 40s.
And it went on for 3 minutes.
I can imagine what the kids were thinking.
They were bored. It was hot outside. You know, they just wanted to get in the pool and swim, and this man wouldn't shut up about Corn Pop and wrapping chains around people's heads. I mean, for crying out loud. I don't necessarily know if I believe that man, but it's certainly interesting.
I want the story to be true, though. That's where I'm at with it.
Yeah, well, so at some point, Corn Pop is gonna come out. If SNL does not do something about this...
They've missed so many opportunities. Have you realized how many opportunities they've missed over the past 6 months in just the Democrats?
Are they back live again? Are they back live again yet?
Are they? I don't know
why we bring them up so many times, but
I stopped watching.
I know, I did too, because they just weren't funny anymore. So, well, apparently Andrew Yang reached out to, there was a SNL cast member who called him a racial slur. So, it was because they, so, and SNL has always been historically criticized because they say you literally have nobody who's Asian on your cast, and so they've been slammed for that. But apparently discrimination against Asian people is somehow okay. I don't know why, but oh, that's just how it's,
that's so, how it is in the education system too.
NBC announced that comedian Bowen Yang was moving from the writing staff to the cast. So Andrew Yang had said on September 13th, congrats, you know, I hope you play me on SNL. And he, I don't even think I can actually do it. I can't even say it. He said, so he referred to, I totally can't even say this. He referred to Andrew Yang personally as a Jew and then a slur for a Chinese person in a May 2019 podcast episode.
Interesting.
And then he kind of apologized on Twitter, but Yang said it because it was sort of a non-apology. The SNL cast member says he's happy to apologize for offensive remarks. And it was, so they said, because they said Seth Simmons tweeted today, SNL announced the hiring of its first cast member of East Asian descent and also this guy. So Shane Gillis was the guy who's been apparently making some very offensive jokes on Twitter and all of this stuff. So as all of this is all happening, so then he comes out, Gillis comes out and says, well, you know, my intention is never to hurt anybody, blah, 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 blah. And then everyone was asking, wait, so what you were saying was a joke? What was the punchline? And Yang basically said that he wasn't impressed by it. And he said, I'd sit down and talk with you. I'm more impressed with comedy that makes people think and doesn't take cheap shots, etc. And then Yang said, well, for the record, I don't want him to lose his job. I don't think he should lose his job. We would benefit from being more forgiving rather than punitive. We are all human.
I agree with that. I mean,
so, yeah. Anyway, there we go.
So if I was just to call you a name and then say, just joking.
I don't know if that works.
Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know if that's how that works.
Like, Danny, you hateful bigot.
Well, that's not a slur, though. You can't like call someone a slur and then be like, well, it's coming. Here's the thing. Comedy for the sake of comedy and just to make people laugh is universal. And there are, it means so much in this. When you are engaging in what you think is comedy, but you are doing so from the perspective of a political animus, then it's malicious and it's not comedy. We've said it on the show before. Does that make sense?
Yeah, we've said comedy with an axe to grind is not comedy.
Yeah.
Comedy with an axe to grind loses its comedy because you're trying to grind that axe, and that's the thing. Comedy with an axe to grind is not comedy.
Right. No, it's not. And it's not funny. It's not comedy. It's not funny. And that's the thing that makes it's tiresome. SNL used to be pretty funny. I never cared about all the times that they made fun of Trump because be real, y'all, certain things Trump does are hysterical, but they need to be fair because there are things like this whole thing with Corn Pop. Holy crap. That's a whole, you don't even have to write it. You just redo it. Just literally say what he says. Have a giant Corn Pop come up. I don't know. There's so many things you could do.
But there's been so many just in Biden alone gaffes. You know what I mean? Not to mention all the stuff from, you know, Elizabeth Warren, Pete Buttigieg. Everybody on that debate stage has had some amazing comedy gold Saturday Night Live to tap into.
You could have Bader and Mayor Pete do a hipster off. That could be like the one debate. We got to settle this. We can only have one white male hipster in our primary. So we here at ABC have decided we are going to host the Democrat primary hipster off between Bader or Rourke and Mayor Pete Buttigieg. And then they could just try to say things that were more pretentious than the other ones. Like, how much vinyl do you own? You know, that could be one question. Can you even spell Kierkegaard? I mean, things like that.
How many IG followers you got?
Yeah. How many times do you eat avocado toast a day? You know, just like different things. Like, have you ever owned a Volvo? Because you're not a real hipster unless you own a Volvo. Like, that's the requirement. In order to even qualify for the debate, you have to own a Volvo. You have to have some vinyl. You know, like things like this. It's just funny.
Solar panels somewhere in your
arsenal. Yeah, you got to have some solar panels. There's just certain things that you could do. But they don't even do that. I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's silly. The one thing that I wanted to touch on really quickly with this story that has to do with the Brett Kavanaugh thing, and I was looking at it. It's part of an excerpt of this book that's meant to go after him. And Robin Pogrebin and Kate Kelly, they're reporters at the New York Times, and they're writing this book that's an anti-Kavanaugh book. This title's really rubbing me the wrong way of this piece, because it says Brett Kavanaugh fit in with the privileged kids. She did not. Can we stop for a minute here? She was from a well-to-do area, and she went to a nice girls' school and all kinds of stuff. So we're to think that somehow she was less privileged than him. I mean, hell, this girl grew up more privileged than myself and Kane and Steve and everybody else that's probably listening to the show. Why did they try to take that route with it? What was that about? Does that strike anybody else as weird that they try to take this route she's less privileged? They try to make out all of her upper crust, whatever. All of the upper crust stuff that she had, her nice neighborhood, her nice school that she went to, all of this other stuff that she did, somehow she was less privileged. I mean, that sounds pretty damn privileged.
Was she at Yale or no? Or
Right? Pretty privileged. Why take that really weird route?
You know, the first thing I thought, I know we have to go to break, but the first thing I thought when I saw that headline was that they were trying to soften the headlines so that people could really get that lying dirt in the story, and they wouldn't have to be called out on it as quickly. That may or may not be the case, but either way, that story is completely retracted and gone.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I don't know. I guess they're trying to say her dad, because her dad is Puerto Rican, then somehow they're trying to make that a liability on her. That is inherently racist. Let me just go back. I'm going to just double check. Yeah, these two super white women, they are the ones who are trying to make Deborah Ramirez's Puerto Rican dad seem like a liability. Oh, she didn't fit in. That is completely fabricated. Chick went to Yale, grew up in a nice area, a hell of a lot nicer house than I ever had, went to a nice school. Come on. As with everything else, this is just, I cannot wait. We're going to have all the recaps we're going to make fun of the over-the-top reactions to the story from certain cable news networks. We'll have all of that. Kel-Tec Weapons, Kel-Tec Firearms, it's a great company, great bunch of people. They just make cool stuff. They make cool stuff, and it's very innovative what they do, just even from how certain things operate. For instance, the KS7, their tactical shotgun line, they have the patented downward shell ejection that Kel-Tec has pioneered. So all of these ejected shells are free out of your line of sight, away from your face and body. The KS7, this is awesome for home defense. Somebody's going to break into your home. They see you with the KS7. If they don't blank their pants, they're going to be running out the door first, whichever one happens first, because this thing is hardcore. But it's really, the thing is it's compact, lightweight. It's bred for personal defense at home. You also can take it out backcountry too. 18.5-inch barrel, 26.1 inches overall length, has an M-lock slot on the carry handle, and also on the pump and stock. Single tube mag holds 6 3-inch shells, one chambered. You want 2 3/4-inch, KS7 holds 7+1. A lot better than ordinary shotguns. So check out everything that Kel-Tec has, including this 12-gauge pump action micro beast. KelTecWeapons.com, KELTEC Weapons.com. Tell them Dana sent you.